Hi there, this is Wafala Bedat. You're listening to the Woman Power Podcast, a subsidiary platform to the Woman Power Summit, the largest event in MENA, with the aim of empowering women and helping them achieve their absolute highest potential. Each week on the Woman Power Podcast, you will hear honest, vulnerable, authentic, real conversations from inspiring women. These women will share their experiences and stories into what it takes to build a successful business and career. The podcast will share insight and inspiration and hopefully inspire action and lead change. Nadia is a consultant, emotional intelligence coach, and lecturer. Her specialties revolve around organizational culture and behavior, innovation, social entrepreneurship, and well-being. She has a passion for tackling people-centered problems in organizations and in society. Before founding Alfred Consulting, she worked as organizational change consultant with SHM Productions in London. Prior to that, her experience included investment banking and business advisory roles at EY, Bank ABC, and as an independent consultant in Bahrain and London. She has worked with clients such as Olayan, Kimberly-Clark, the East India Company, Tim Keen, GEW, Aon Digital, The Best You, and more. So welcome, Nadia. I'm really excited to have you here at the Woman Power Podcast. So let's just get started. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, COVID. How are you using this time?
I think this is an assumption, but I think most people have gone through phases. It's been a while now. I assume everyone's had sort of highs and lows or ups and downs a little bit. I certainly have. I think at the very beginning, it wasn't good, but I was a week away from like a super, super busy month in a really exciting way. But also it was going to be so busy that I knew it was going to be like just a really intense, overwhelming period after which things would cool back down again. And so at the beginning where it was like, okay, it's just a slight delay of a couple weeks, I was a bit relieved because I felt like it meant my work would stretch out a bit more and it would be more manageable. So I was like, okay, maybe this is a good thing. You know, we can kind of like ease into things, slow down a bit, have a bit more of a human normal schedule instead of overloading myself for the sake of the projects I want to do. And then, of course, it turned into what it is. And so after a while, it's like, oh, well, now that project's gone. So, you know, there's been some losses. There's been some things that I've just had to do differently. All in all, I think I've just, you know, eased into a new routine, taken advantage of the slower, but I would say probably more normal pace of life. So my days are still very full, but it's more balanced. So I walk maybe 3 times a week, which is not something I do on a regular basis. That takes up like, I don't know, 40 minutes to an hour in a day, you know, and that is a lot of time to carve out in addition to, you know, maybe normally going to the gym, doing other forms of exercise. So little things like that. So my days are quite full, but much more balanced and calmer. And it's been different phases as I've gone through the last few months.
Have you been anxious at all?
Yeah.
Like, was there a day where you're like, oh, this is the worst day?
I won't say that. So in the beginning, let me tell you a bit more about or expand on the phases a bit more. So in the beginning, I kind of looked at my own experience and reflected on how I was dealing with things. And of course, everyone's situation is a little different, but still, we're all going through this, right, as a collective. So I would kind of just reflect on, you know, how I was feeling about things. And you observe things, whether it's in your family or friends I was still seeing a little bit at the beginning, or just through messages, you know, on social media. And I was just like, I'm actually doing really okay. Like, everyone is freaking out and so much fear-based reactivity and so much anxiety. And fair game, 100% fair game. I just thought, like, one thing that crossed my mind is like, you know, I can see all of these things and yeah, it's scary and it's worrying and I'm also checking the news and I don't know what's coming. There's so much uncertainty. And So I was anxious, but I just didn't feel as overwhelmed as everybody else. And I felt like I was dealing with it better. And I didn't really share this with people because it's not a nice thing to say. And everyone goes through whatever they go through. There's no experience here that's wrong, especially in situations like this, right? But I just thought, is like, why do I feel relatively okay? And I just, you know, one thing I wondered was, is the training I've had and the coaching I've had in emotional intelligence and the shifts that I have seen pre-COVID on that front, is that helping me deal with this better than, let's say, the average experience? And I don't know, I don't have a definitive answer to that, but it's probably a big factor in my ability to self-manage my emotions, my stresses. So 100% I get stressed, I get anxious. I've taken a step back from some work. So 2020 for me started out really well. I had landed a really important project. There was a lot of potential for more work. And so it seemed like the next phase for me. And that disappeared. Potentially it's a delay and things may resurface again. Maybe, you know, new opportunities are on their way that I've taken a step back. I've slowed down. I'm having a massive rethink about things, which, yeah, that makes me a little anxious. What do I do? How can I best move forward? All these kind of questions. And again, we all face this uncertainty, but all those things considered, I felt pretty okay for the most part.
So talk to me about starting your organization, because that came to you sooner than you expected. And then through your workshops or dealing with different projects and clients, what do you feel is missing, or what do you feel people need most from this part of the world?
I'm curious about actually what you said, that people here want to understand their own behavior and so on. On the one hand, I feel like that's everyone's natural experience. Like, who doesn't want to understand themselves better or, you know, self-manage better? But on the other hand, it caught me a bit by surprise, because I was like, really? People are really interested in that? More of the kind of work I want to be doing here is needed. Like, it's just individuals and companies just need to do it. They're not doing it enough. So, and this is me as someone who is possible of delivering some of these kind of services. I'm not doing anywhere near enough of it yet. I still am very in the relatively early stages of my business and what I'm doing. It's a very new area of work. What I've noticed is that individuals are very interested in self-development. They're also very interested in the topic of organizational behavior and culture change. Largely the younger crowd, or the sort of low, mid to lower kind of levels in organizations. And I think that's because they are facing the struggles. And I'm sure at every level of an organization, there are challenges, you know, managing teams, leaders, and whatnot. But I think the business case for this type of work, the organizational culture work, I find the younger crowds to be fascinated with whenever I speak anywhere, whether it's a workshop or just, you know, a one-to-one conversation, because they need it. I don't think that business leaders understand it as much yet. Not to say they don't face those challenges. I think it's a number of things. It's still a very young field here in terms of practice. I think a number of people are exposed to it. So it's overwhelmingly, it falls on the lap of, you know, the HR crowd, but it's really HR and strategy, and the C-suite needs to be on board. Like, if they don't get it and they don't want it, it's not going to happen. It needs to be led from the top. It's just one of those things, because they have to, you know, walk the walk. If the top level doesn't do that, then you can do all the workshops you want with those below them. They're just not going to buy it, and no change will happen, right? And I just don't think that enough of this kind of work is happening yet. And I think it's because there's various reasons. So one, it's new, like I said earlier. I think there is a lot of raising awareness that we still need to do. People need to understand that it exists, what it's about, that it's not, oh, send them to, you know, one day training and all my problems are solved. It's behavior change. It's not how it happens. Have you ever tried changing your own habit on anything, right? Like drinking more water in a day? Try doing that for an organization to change how they work, right? It's just not a overnight thing. And then just tying it to the bottom line, to show that it has an impact, even in terms of profitability, productivity, innovation, all of these things. I don't think that that is clear enough yet, that business case, for a lot of people. So there's a lot more education and raising awareness that is needed. And then also priorities, like your financial priorities to invest in like a consulting project in this. There's, I mean, look at what COVID's doing to businesses now, right? They need this, but this nobody's priority at the moment, right? So there's, you know, all sorts of things like that going on. I think the consumer market is much more willing, but I don't think everyone... So I've done a lot of investing in myself and doing the work and for many years in various ways. I don't know to what extent people want to be doing that. I definitely know there's a lot of people who do, certainly enough people, and I think it's becoming... Certain things are also more normalized, and that's needed time, right? Like getting a coach, getting therapy, which is different, but, you know, still related as well to some extent. These things are, again, they're just new, right?
This podcast is brought to you by O'Brien Hill. O'Brien Hill is a leading communications agency focusing on public relations, event management, and marketing. It's made up of a fantastic group of creatives in the design and PR fields. The agency first came to life in 2010 as my brainchild. Our creative consulting services were in demand in the UK after our online publication Sketchbook became an overnight success. Much like a proud mama, our agency's namesake is attributed to the place of its inception, Notting Hill. It's now 10 years later and we're one of the leading communication agencies in town, and we as a team are incredibly proud to be working on this very podcast behind the scenes. Check us out on www.obrienhill.com. And it's new. I mean, I can only talk about my experience. Is it's overwhelming. So it's like, where do I begin? And I think when you're trying to run a company or if you have a startup, so much has to be done on the product and service side to perfect that, to add value to clients who then pay the salaries to your team and to yourself. And that my challenge has always been, where do I put my time? And I think it comes from a place of, it's an extreme challenge. I think even for an HR person or somebody who's tasked with, to me, when I think about organizational change and culture, I have a little mini meltdown, honestly, because I feel like there's so much to be done and there's so much that we could do. And it's actually so creative and it can be very exciting and engaging. And I think teams need it. I can't drop the ball on the one hand. So then it's definitely like, how I would describe it is just overwhelming. But yeah, then it's hard because nothing is more important than your team. So it's a catch-22. It's like, where do I shift my focus? And I think in my experience, I've tried to do the very best that I could from an organization perspective, but also really paying attention to my clients because they pay the bills. Like, we wouldn't be here. Nobody would be here. The training wouldn't be here. The option to hire the consultant or to take time to read those books wouldn't be possible without making sure that inflow of business is coming in. So it's just, to me, it's time and energy and prioritizing it. And it can get really challenging. And which brings me to my next question. So let's imagine a startup has a toxic work culture or has a challenging, or they have retention challenges. If you could advise, or maybe based on your experience, and I'm sure there's no quick answer, do a one-day train, like that's not what I'm looking for, but if you could somehow give us an idea of a couple of things that CEO or that business owner could do, or maybe what they should focus on, go deeper into these subjects. So how would you direct them into a place where they could make some shifts and get some wins for their organization?
The first step with these sort of things is really understanding what the problem is to begin with. Because even if you say toxic culture, how is that coming to be? How is that emerging? You know, what are the root causes behind that? So the first step is really detective work, you know, and some of the work that I was doing in London before I moved back to Bahrain was a lot of it. We were just essentially being corporate anthropologists. You know, there's an organization that has a tricky behavioral problem. They may have worked with other consultants before in the past, but they can't fix it. They haven't been able to figure it out. They've thrown like, you know, a lot of money at it, and it's still, they haven't figured it out yet. And so the first step, what we always do is just talk to people and figure out what was going on. So whether, depending on the organization, on the situation, on the budget of the project, you could, you know, design interviews and surveys, or, you know, like whether it's in person or just talk to people at different levels or on particular teams to figure out what's going on.
Is this something that an insider person has to do? You know, who do you trust, right? So who would you go and take this information to? It could get you to lose your job. Some people might qabilon this kind of feedback. Would you always recommend like an outsider to come in, or for this to be outsourced so then it's more like not biased? Or
so that's, I mean, I've never been an in-house HR person trying to do that. You know, I've always been the consultant on a team doing that kind of work for another company. And there is a definite advantage to getting neutral outsiders, and the way in which we would do that as well to try and make sure that they trust us, that they know it's all confidential, that you're not going to feedback stuff to their management and things like that. So the way you would structure those conversations, those interviews, and even, you know, agree to the project with whoever is, you know, the sponsor of the project internally, you have to be like, you know, this is all going to be anonymous. You can select 20, 30, 50 people that we interview, but we are not going to tell you who said what. If it's a big enough group of people you're talking to in whatever way, then maybe you can pull out certain quotes from the interviews. But what we used to do is we used to take all of that information. I haven't actually done this type of project in Bahrain yet or in the region. This has been my previous work. Here it's been a bit different. But if it's a big enough group of people that you speak with, what we do is we go through all of those interviews that, you know, a couple of us will do on the team, and then we really try and sort of figure out what is going on. So what are people saying, this point of view, that point of view, what's going on, and beneath that, like reading between the lines to really try and see what's going on. So like I said, you're like a corporate anthropologist trying to understand this little organizational society. And based on that, then you can see, okay, what are our recommendations? And maybe you just make some recommendations and they run with it. Maybe, you know, you actually come up with certain interventions that you then run with, whether it's workshops or some other form of anything, really, coaching, training, different things, yeah.
Have you noticed any patterns based on your work experience here of what organizations are doing wrong?
Managing stress is just such a huge thing. What causes the stress could be a whole host of different things, right? Whether it is your boss is micromanaging you, whether, you know, you're not fulfilled at work, whether it's a really toxic team dynamic. There's all sorts of reasons.
In my experience, maybe it's a generation thing, I don't know, but burning out is normal. Mm-hmm. Or I have been taught and trained and fed that if you want to be successful, you have to give everything 100%, you have to show up, you have to overexceed expectations. And that's how you learn, that's how you gain the trust of the people around you. And it's worked for me so far. However, burning out has caused me to be mentally exhausted, tired. I've had, you know, many breakdowns. I've cried. I've slept for days or weeks or months to recover. So it's not easy to recover from burning out. When we work, or when I've worked with people who are fresh graduates or people who are newly graduated and just entering the workforce, they do to get very stressed out when they join an organization. And I always feel like just at the tip of, and they do tend to burn out, and I don't think they know how to process burning out. When I used to work for companies, when I used to burn out, I would never quit. I would take some time off, take some, you know, some time to rest. I take the weekend to rest. I would talk to friends. I talk to mentors, but I would go back in. And I just feel like this idea of if you're too stressed, you should leave has been so, I don't want to say destructive, but I feel people check out before they even grow or learn. It's like, there's this huge fear around burning out. Like, this company makes me burn out, so I want to leave. But actually, how are you supposed to be good at anything if you check out before you actually peak? Like, what if peaking at something means you have to overexert, or meaning you have to come out of your comfort zone or change your routine? So I don't know. I've been reading all these articles about burning out, and I'm like, what's so wrong with burning out? And it's such a taboo subject, and I've been really avoiding sharing it or talking about it. But I just think this would be, like, I'm very interested to learn, like, am I wrong or are they right?
Only because I want to make sure that I'm hearing you right. It sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that to you, burning out, you seem to be equating burning out with giving something your best and working, like, just productivity and working very hard. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm connecting the two, but that's based on my experience. But I think it's also the people that I look up to and my mentors. So when they've really believed in something and they've wanted excellence and they've wanted their companies to grow, I think we all go through waves of really fast, really quick, really strong. And then, yeah, there is a burnout because we're not machines. But then we come back to the fight, we come back to work.
So I think it's very common. It's okay. I don't think it should be a taboo subject. In fact, like anything that is challenging or difficult that you go through, just knowing that other people are having a similar experience helps. You don't feel like you're weak, you're too weak, or you incapable, or you didn't give it your all, you know? So I'm very much a fan of making things that are taboo not taboo to talk about, because just the act of talking about them helps you work through them rather than quitting because of it or getting sick because of it or things like that. I think it helps everyone when we bring these topics to the table. I've certainly burned out a couple times, but I think, so for me, I don't think you have to burn out in order to have those spurts or moments where your company's growing or you're trying to achieve something or meet a deadline or whatever. I think it's normal for any professional or any business owner to go through phases where you're very, very busy and phases where it's calmer. Whether or not you burn out is sort of how you self-manage your personal balance. And it's not just about the work. It's about everything 360 in your life. So one of the workshops that I teach, and it's also something that I can coach people on, but is just, you know, how can you, if you know that you're gonna enter a period where it's just gonna be a bit mental for a while, if you know that's coming, like pre-COVID, when I knew that there was going to be this month where I was just going to be super busy, almost nonstop, like running for a whole month, right? I knew I was going into that, but consciously, and I knew it was going to exhaust me, but it was also going to be really fulfilling. Like, the reason why I doubled up and took on the extra load, because that extra load was the thing that I wanted to be working on. And I knew I could work my way through it. But the way that I then have to, you know, manage myself through that phase is to make adjustments to my day-to-day, which might mean, you know, work all the time. Like, you just, maybe for, you go out less, or you make sure you eat better, or you shift things in your routine. And it's really, really the basics, right? So there's something called, like, you can call it personal sustainability, but just all around your well-being, right? Like your food, exercise, sleep quality, and how long you're sleeping, you know, your social support system, whether it's your best friend or your pet or your kid or your whatever, you know, like all of these things are things that we need to constantly just reflect on. What does that balance look like for me in my life right now? And and that shifts. There are phases where I'm out all the time. Like December is usually a very festive month. It's also my birthday. It's also like just, you know, see, work tends to slow down towards the end of the month. So December, I'm always out a lot with friends, you know, doing all sorts of things. But that's not sustainable for the whole year if I want to be a productive human being, right? There's different phases. And for each phase or whatever you might want to take on, you need to then also just have a bit of a check on overall, how am I doing in order to get me through that period, right? So I don't think it's necessary. Burning out is not a good thing, because it has some pretty severe health repercussions, and health, sort of physical health, mental, emotional health. It takes a lot of time to recover. You can come back from burnout 100%. Like you and I think we've both burned out a couple times by the sounds of it. So, you know, you go through that phase and then you can, you know, sleep it off for a while or whatever, but it is possible to try and get through it in a bit more balanced way, even if it's just slight adjustments that sort of, you know, you're pushing yourself to the edge, but you're not falling over the edge.
This podcast is brought to you by the Women Power Summit. The Women Power Summit is an annual event that hosts more than 2,000 guests to listen, learn, and network with more than 100 plus speakers and industry leaders. The summit creates space for growth, learning, discussion, and collaboration with the means of creating a space where women can support each other, ask questions, be curious, and be inspired. This brings me to my second question. Is it realistic to work 9 to 5 and still get ahead in your career? And I'm only asking that question because everybody I trust to work with, everybody that I've promoted, are people who their 9 to 5 is like the bare minimum. You're coming in, you're clocking out. Even if you're producing good quality work, you're not really open to evening events, networking events with your manager. Like, I mean, in my industry, it's kind of like event-based. You're not going to the events. You're not attending things and seeing what's going on. You're not engaging with people in the group. So you're defining your working hours to maybe maintain some of those things, like your well-being or just to have some balance. But then everyone around me that excels, that their CEOs depend on, that get, you know, promoted 3, 4, 5 levels up in a short span are the ones that are putting in the time. So can you have the balance but also get ahead?
We don't all want the same thing. I don't think there's one career that is the guaranteed way to success. It depends on what the person wants. The example of the team members who do the 9 to 5, but, you know, not more beyond that, and those who attend all the events and, you know, make the extra effort to network and all sorts of other stuff. What I noticed in myself, I won't speak for everybody, you know, there's many ways to build a career, but what I noticed is the times where I've had to push myself and like work late into the night. I don't do it regularly, but I do it. But just generally, really just, you know, go the extra mile. If it was something that I was working on that I loved, that I believed in, that I was really like, or had gave me a sense of purpose, or I was really motivated by or excited by, it didn't exhaust me. Like, I mean, I was tired, but it wasn't going to be something that burned me out. I wanted it. Also, for me, I have to really love what I'm doing and be really interested in it, be learning from it. So fulfillment, really, whatever that means to a person. So even at the very beginning of my career where I was like, okay, I don't necessarily want to be a banker forever, but I was learning. And I worked, I studied on top of that. I did like these evening classes for a year because I was the only one on the team who had never done any business studies or anything. So I was like learning the whole time. And that was enough to keep me excited about it and interested. But after a while, I'd picked up the basics and I was like, okay, I'm bored. This is not good enough for me anymore. And I need to do something else, right? So, but it was those sorts of things that the extra, even now, the extra hours that I put in, because I work a lot nowadays, but it's because I love it and I believe in it and I want it, it'll tire me out, but it won't burn me out. Does that make sense?
It actually makes a lot of sense.
It depends. We don't all want to get ahead in this corporate ladder, or it's very different. Some people are, like for me, doing things for myself as well motivate me more than doing it for someone else.
How do you get someone who is either unhappy in their job, or they don't feel satisfied, or the learning curve has stopped? How do you get them to have a sense of fulfillment? Do they go and ask for it? Do they start to communicate their concerns? Do they work with somebody like their own coach and figure out, like, how do I instill a sense of purpose within this framework? What are their options?
I mean, I did this, right? Like, what do I want? You know, no one can answer that for me. I had to figure it out. And, you know, from what I was talking about earlier, I was doing all sorts of stuff and I was learning, but I knew this wasn't my thing. And I had to figure out what that was. And I didn't know. And it took me many years to sort of figure it out or really hone in on it. And so starting to ask questions like, okay, I hate this, but what do I want? What am I good at? Just really starting to figure that out for yourself. And there are many ways to do that. Reading books, talking to other people, whether it's mentors or people in different industries, go, you know, learn from them, read about them, ask for, you know, get a mentor, get a coach. There's this so many ways, you know, have a conversation with your manager and be like, you know, I would like to take on a new type of project or a new challenge. If you're doing a particular thing in an organization, but you can see over there another team is doing something else and you think maybe that's something interesting, ask to do something on the other team, do some other project, or to get some training. Like there's a lot of different things. There's also people who aren't really that bothered by all this, I think. I mean, this is from the outside looking in, because I personally don't fully relate to this experience, but not everyone needs, I think, their job to be like this, I don't know, be all and end all, right? It's a job, I do my work, and okay, yeah, you want to enjoy it and be good at it and get promoted and things like that, but like, what really matters to this person is the other stuff in their life, their family, their kids, their hobby. You know, there's people who are, you know, doing the 9 to 5 and then some, but then they go home and then they paint all day and all night because that's like their favorite thing in the world to do, you know, and that's perfectly okay. They don't need to find all of their answers in their career. Life is full of so many things. Get a hobby. Find fulfillment somewhere. It doesn't have to be, it's not one thing. There's not one answer what this looks like.
That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to an episode of the Woman Power Podcast. And thank you for downloading and streaming our podcast every week. If you love what you've heard, tag us on Instagram and follow the Woman Power Podcast and Woman Power Summit account for more information on our next episode. Please leave a rating review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps other women discover the show. That's it from me. See you next week.